why is it that Australia couldn't possibly afford the space agency? So to put this in context, the New South Wales government spent $1 billion on the $6 billion casino development in Barangaroo. I just come back from New South Wales for CBIT. $6 billion, do we really need another casino? Surely we could have spent that in a better way.
It's not a zero-sum game, so you're not, you know, sacrificing something to get something else. It would be a saving in the overall budgets of all the departments and agencies and state government and federal government things that do buy satellite data if we had the overall umbrella of the Australian Space Agency to manage that, as you've heard from everybody. At the same time, it's difficult to... everyone's been struggling for survival for so long and fighting to keep their own budgets that you can't say to them, oh, you're going to save like this much money per year by having it all together and you're still going to get the same satellite data, because they see that as cutting into their budget. So that's part of the opposition that you're always going to get back, even if it's better for people and the organisations. But in any case, no, the amount that we spend per year, we could reduce that by like a factor of 10 immediately if we had a space agency which was then able to have the global partnerships to use all the billions of dollars of infrastructure that they've already got flying and we can have instant access to with international agreements.
You've travelled US, UK, now Australia as part of your crew. What are your thoughts on the investment overall? How does Australia really stack up?
So it's been interesting. So I'm from California originally, and I have some personal family connection to the space program, to the Apollo program, and I've applied to be an astronaut with NASA. I didn't quite get there. I made the first cut. And so the idea of space exploration and investment in space has just been part of my life. And it's been interesting coming here and seeing that I'm an academic. I'm a researcher in theoretical cosmology, so nothing really connected to the sort of day-to-day, concrete stuff like sending up rockets. But Australia is unique in being really great on the academic side, really great on the science side, and everyone I've talked to just is so frustrated by the lack of innovation, the lack of really pushing forward in things like space. Like we should be this massively high-tech, world-leading group of people, and that translation hasn't been happening. So it's been interesting to see that contrast, like that there is such a space for development in this area, and even as somebody who is totally a theorist, it's something that I'm particularly excited about, and as part of that, I've become involved in a CubeSat project for through the University of Melbourne, where we're going to develop a little CubeSat to be a space telescope and observe distant explosions in the universe. And this is something that if it works out, will probably be Australia's first space telescope, and that's something that I'm very excited about as well. So.
I think there's a couple of issues there. When you talk about investing in casinos, that's a short-term vision the government can see. Pardon me. It's a low-risk investment. They know they can make a buckload of money, possibly in their term. A strategy by supporting an innovation objective like space is certainly a long-term investment, and that's what our governments don't do very well. We can't wait for the government to make decisions. We've just got to move forward, and as whether it's a R&D sector or an industry sector or whatever, getting entrepreneurs, we need to move forward without the government's visions, because they're not going to give it. We're going to have to make those visions, I think. And we need to get rid of that risk-averse issue that we've got at all levels in Australia, I think.
Here. I just wanted to give a little bit of evidence, although kind of not. But anyway, I'm from New South Wales. I live in Sydney. I've lived in every single capital city in Australia, but right now I live in Sydney because that's where I met my wife. But there is a state in Australia where they've seen quite a lot of success in new space. And they, because they've seen that evidence of success, they're preparing to massively increase actually their support to try and help the market failure problem. Because essentially, you know, the theory is the market should solve all these problems. Where the market doesn't solve the problem, then that's a perfect moment for intervention. In Australia, traditionally, we haven't been intervening. Just recently, the governments that we've had is getting much more aggressive about intervening because of all those other forces I was telling you about in society, which they're aware of. So I think to your point, and I think Andrew said the same thing, timing is perfect, but they need strong evidence. And so hopefully we'll see one of the smaller states taking a big chunk or a big step to support this and to unlock infrastructure and help. But they also don't want to just buy toys for people. They want to match funds. They want to unblock blockages. They want to, you know, attract talent. We've got to get you back in the country. So that's the evidence I've got.
You're talking about South Australia anyway, so at least it's my home state.
Who lives here?
So we've lost approximately $2.2 billion, I think that was the figure. This is a question from the audience. Firstly, where's that really attributed from, and what's the actual opportunity cost overall? Is entrepreneurship
we've
the
most... We've lost $2.2
billion. Yeah, due to a lack of space agency and program. It's one of the... Yeah. It was spent it, yeah.
Oh, you mean, okay, so the...
In overseas.
Yeah, they're just recent examples. All of the Optus satellites have been bought overseas. So all of our space assets really over the last 15, 20 years have been... That money's just gone overseas. There's no reason why that NBN launch could have had two satellites on there that were built by their home country. It's just that Argentina got it right, we got it wrong. What was your actual question?
So my question is that if other countries are getting it right and if previously we've had situations where investments have gone wrong, how are we better equipped now to tell the difference between real and fake projects?
Well, I think the examples that we've seen... okay, there's two things. One is that the way forward, and I guess this is not particularly my opinion because we've heard everyone say it, is that these small startups are the way that Australia... the way forward for Australia, right? Because you don't need the agency to be there for these sort of companies to succeed, and we've seen the companies succeeding already in this area, right? If a venture capitalist puts money into the company, that should be evidence enough for the government at least to know that this is... that is worthy of investment. South Australia, at least one state government, seems to have had that realisation.
Yep.
Sorry, I've got a point. I think part of it too was Australia's never had a strategy or a policy. And when they threw money at stuff, a lot of the times it was the politicians throwing money at the sexy launch type activities. Now, they're generally the higher risk part of the equation, and they're not necessarily the equation that's going to... the area that's going to benefit the Australian economy and national security. So having a strategy where you think about those important pieces, and everyone's talked about various elements of that, whether it's satellites, Earth observation for water, whatever, if they actually had some decent strategy in place and threw those lots of... big piles of money at those areas that would best suit support the country, then we probably would have a more stable, larger space sector.
Yeah, and the reason why we don't have to pay billions to make that happen is because all of the other agencies already have that in place. They really like Australia for reasons I don't know. They just like us. We're pretty friendly overseas, got a good reputation. And it's also an asset to have us as a partner country for them to have their ground stations and other connections here. So we can have access to all of that for... we did the calculations, actually. It's $20 million per year, and we would have access to about $7 billion worth of existing tech immediately, which then is instant customer base as well as jobs and everything else. So it's pretty much a no-brainer. The cameras are off, right? Okay. So not to rag on the government, all the top ministers actually support a space agency right now. I'm meeting with them pretty regularly, and they all do support it. So they don't want to announce it yet, so it can't be like... what's the word, sabotaged by the opposition and other people with vested interests and all that sort of stuff. So quiet diplomacy, but stuff is happening. And for the first time ever, we do have all the ministers supporting exactly what was said in the white paper and in some other papers that we've done in the background with them too. So that's the difference this year, is that they do understand it finally and they're like, oh, why aren't we doing this? And they're trying to make it happen. So it's almost there, but not there yet.
So a question from the audience, and I'll direct it to you, is that if you don't want to start your own business, how can you contribute to this?
So I mean, I'm not an entrepreneur. I have had no experience with that, and starting a business is not something I've ever really thought about. But I'm part of this through research, through getting involved in this CubeSat project. And there are a lot of opportunities actually developing around Australia. There's a program here in Melbourne, the Melbourne Space Program, where Melbourne University students can get involved in various space related things. They're developing a CubeSat for a sort of communications technology test CubeSat, but they're actually building the thing here. And I went and saw the lab the other day. It's really cool. So there are opportunities through universities for young people to get involved. And there are a number of sort of just big initiatives where you can get involved in investing, and you can get involved in sort of small local startup-y type things without building your own, and that's something that's definitely growing. And even if if you're not a business inclined person, you can still take part in this sort of thing. And it has the opportunity to just bring a lot more people into science and technology in new ways, which is something that I'm particularly interested in. I think that's something that there's been a little bit of mention of that. A lot of the panel has been talking mostly about money, which is very important. And but I think the inspiration part and the sort of the triggering of investment into other areas of science really shouldn't be underestimated. There are so many people I know who got into physics and astronomy through just what NASA has done and what the exploration of space has meant to them personally. And I think that's something that could be really helpful here as well.
And there's citizen science projects you can just do from your lounge room as well. So actually, most of the processing for the Juno images that came out yesterday, they were actually people doing that at home and giving that back to NASA as part of the collaborative image processing. So most of the really cool, the blue, if you've seen the blue circle, yeah, but that was actually mostly normal, regular people at their home computer. So you can just do that casually whenever you feel like it as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to give some advice quickly. So, when we're talking about start a space company tomorrow, that's just a rhetorical thing. We do actually advise that you don't incorporate any kind of entity until you have at least some kind of problem solution or a problem market fit. So first of all, if you are a real entrepreneur, the really important thing to do is first of all get mentoring, get training, find like minds and work alongside them, and understand that being a startup is conducting a search. Startups are groups of people who are confused about who their market and their customer is, what price to charge and what their solution is, and hence are searching. Right, that is what a startup is. And so first of all, if you want to get involved in it from an entrepreneurship side, which we'd love to see, don't incorporate straight away. Actually start to search for real customers with real problems. Or if you are going to go and completely future, envisage a future possibility, make sure you backcast to today and try and work out what you're going to start with and then map it onto a customer group. I can say that a few times after the show, if you lost a thread there. I think that some of the citizen space opportunities that both the internet offers and also increasingly our civil society and universities are just great. You're here tonight. You're involved in the space industry tonight. We did a fantastic program. We're going to try and run this a few times where we did a day without space. And we had all sorts of different representatives from different pieces of society and to try to describe what would happen. I think the UK did this originally. And they did a day without space. And the banking sector were the first ones to go, holy shit, the whole thing's going to stop. And then the military people freaked out because all of their weapon systems, they suddenly realized, involved space-based assets. And then increasingly the government realized things were going to break. So actually this notion, if you have a friend who says, space, what a waste of money. Why don't we spend the money here on Earth? Yeah, that is how the space industry works. We take our rockets, we stick them full of $100 notes and we fire them up into space, and then we scatter it around the planet. The money gets spent on Earth creating jobs, creating an ecosystem. And so that great analogy that you can tell your friends is around what would it be like to have a day with no GPS, no route mapping from Uber, Timing data from banks and ATMs, you know, no, all the military, all the air traffic control, all those shipping systems, the smart infrastructure, et cetera, all kind of breaks down.
I mean, you might think, oh, well, I don't use a satellite phone. I use a mobile phone that talks to that base station over there. That base station over there gets its timing from GPS. That base station stops working as soon as GPS stops working, so you have no communication.
I think you've answered one of the audience's questions, which was, how would you sell the average Australian on diverting money into this program? What is your sell? What's your pitch to the average Australian?
To the average Australian, it's just, if we want to actually lead the world in things like food security, water security and things like that, we need to invest in space, because that's one of the methods and one of the tools. It's not the total tool, and this is what you've got to speak to people. It is just part of the solution that we need. If we want to become the nation in the region, feeding the region, we've got more land and spare water and things like that in the world, and if we can use that effectively, we can help the world as well as help our country grow, the economy. So I think the exploration, the big dollars that are spent there might scare people off, but I think that's really important as well. It's got to be an element of that puzzle. Like, we can't, it's just like, you don't just cancel your arts program or your or other sort of related programs. You need a good balance across everything. And space is an important element of that, which is going to secure our future in energy and water and all those other elements that we need.
Well, one of the observations from an industrial point of view seems to be that Australia's made its money mining the earth. They're mining what's on the earth. They're now mining, I guess, the area just above the earth. Why not mine the sky? And we're incredibly good at combining all those particular experiences. Yeah.
The big issue here is those mining or resources are critical to the globe. In the next 20, 30 years, it's not going to be an issue, but it's the future that people are going to worry about. The planet can't sustain. If everyone decided to get our standard of living on the whole planet now, we'd need 10 planets of resources to support that. Now, we need to start solving those problems now. Now, we should be starting at home on efficiency, reusability and those sort of things. But even doing that, at some stage, we're going to have to win resources from other locations, and space is just one of those. And
actually, I do want to ask.
Yeah, for those of you that are interested, there's a Off-Earth Mining Forum at UNSW on the 20th and 21st of September this year. But that area, which seemed to be like fantasy, this is the third forum we've run. The first one we ran 4 years ago, and everyone's going, oh, yeah, we'll do platinum group metals, we'll do iron ore on this asteroid or whatever. So that was 2013. 2015, water. What we're going to do is going to go mine water. We're going to go to Mars, get water. We're going to go to asteroids, get water, because that's the starting point. You can use water for lots of things, in reactions and stuff, anything else you want to do in space. You can turn it into rocket fuel and hydrogen and oxygen. So first thing we're going to do, water. So even in that short time, decisions have been made. The rate at which this area has progressed, even in the last 2 years, is really quite incredible. Some of the things that people are talking about, everyone's talking about 3D printing of bricks from Lunar Simulant or whatever else. There's lots of things that are currently going on. We are having no trouble finding people to come and speak to this thing. And the reason why it is on when it's on is because it's the week before the IAC, and we're hoping that international visitors will spend 2 weeks in Australia instead of one. And they get to spend the weekend in Sydney rather than Adelaide. And I mean, we're doing him a big favour.
Actually, at my work, we also have a division. It's called Spaceship EAC, and it's dedicated to Moonbase. We've heard Jan Werner talk about that. It's not just something from Iron Sky. When he first announced it, I'd seen Iron Sky. I think I was the only one in the room that had. Anyway, if you haven't watched that movie, watch it. we have an entire division which works on. We've created our own lunar regolith. We're building a giant 30-meter dome, which is our moon training base, which is outside my window, and we've got a whole division working on 3D printing and using regolith for energy storage and all that sort of stuff. And a few of us wrote a textbook on space mineral resources. It's very boring, but if you're interested, it's on Kindle, so just Google that.
Actually, can I just return to the point I was just making? So we're running this thing in Sydney the week before IAC, and we're running a whole lot of other stuff in Sydney that week because the IAC is on, because IAC is huge, right, as you saw. You guys aren't doing much. Melbourne's a bit of a ghost town. You know, when it comes to what's happening the week before IAC or the week after IAC, it's tumbleweeds down here. Come on, do something.
Peter.
There is a festival at the museum the week before. I'm speaking at it, so I know there's definitely something. And I know VSEC's got some stuff. So there's a couple of things at least, like more education stuff, but there's a few things.
So just one other point on that, the importance of resources in space. I was just come back from, we had an Australian panel at a huge space congress conference in Colorado, and I went to a lot of the other presentations, and the investment and time and effort that industry is investing in winning resources from outer space is massive. So it's not just governments with this idea. Industry is actually seeing it and is actually probably leading some of this stuff. So
yeah. Goldman Sachs just published an article and an investment paper on the scale. And I think it's also important to mention, you didn't mention this, people aren't talking about bringing these resources back down to Earth. It turns out that if you leave them in space, they're worth 100 times more. And so there's a new economy in space that we see about to be created. And Australia should have a piece of that. Australia should be involved and engaged in that and earning an income and helping to pay for our schools and our health costs and our defence and so on.
And the reason why Australia is well placed.
I'm just going to call you on that because, you know, we did mention before in a presentation that we shouldn't be in the exploration non-launch game. So how are we going to do that if we don't?
So it's good to call that out. So a little bit of extra sophistication in the model. The big exponential challenges in the world around water security, food security, environmental, climate change, they are definitely in the short term, 10 to 15 years, they are definitely the things where huge problems can be solved, and where huge problems can be solved, you can also make an enormous amount of money and impact, right? So that's definitely our priority. However, we're also seeing these longer term bets by some of these larger countries. So for example, NASA is getting out of low Earth orbit, is not going to be doing any more missions in low Earth orbit to make room for commercial entities in low Earth orbit to do these shorter term.
Is it and to make room, or is it because it wasn't commercially viable, or because
they don't need to be commercially viable? No, it wasn't commercially viable with NASA kind of continually offering free rides. So when they're out of the game, people start to invest, like people who will bring in their requirements, like the pharmaceutical industries, like the agricultural industries, will actually start bringing in their requirements rather than the science requirements. So that is a way to change the formula for low Earth orbit.
Well, I mean, I come from a medical background where, you know, if we charge $300 an hour, everyone is up in arms. And that's because we work for the government, right? We work for the people. But if somebody that comes from a non-allied health or like an alternative health background charges you $300 an hour, you believe it. In fact, the spending is seven times in alternative health than it is regular health. So is it simply that commercial entities are able to charge that and make it commercially viable because they're not NASA?
No, actually, a commercial entity has to make a profit to survive. So their customers will pressure them on price. I think the issue is that we had a blockage of investment in low Earth orbit because we had so much government activity. So there's been an active policy now to say we've created a pathway, we've shown what can be possible, and now we're handing over to you. And we're seeing a lot of senior folks in NASA actually quitting and joining the private industry because they're seeing that huge opportunity. There is this longer term view that there is a deep space economy, and so we believe that we need to totally, as you said, get on and solve those problems in Earth with a whole stack of solutions from space. But that will give us a seat at the table with all those other activities, and we expect those to grow and grow and grow, and hey, you've got the whole solar system, right?
Yeah, but coming back from what, you know, the business case for that is nice, but it doesn't close. No one's gotten that to close. So let's, and I think I'm the only, maybe the only ones, but, you know, because I did half my career in mining, you know, actually underground, and half my career in the space station. It's not there. It's a nice concept, but the business case does not close, and I think everybody accepts that. I was going to say for the commercial stuff happening right now. So NanoRacks is the US side, which, you know, anybody can send their stuff up through NanoRacks fairly efficiently to the space station. But we've got a new thing coming out of Europe right now called Ice Cubes. We're going to be online by the end of this year, so you can send up the CubeSat equivalents or multiple ones. Like we've got 4x4, so you can have whatever configuration that you want. And instead of putting it up there and stuff works and, you know, you don't get much insight because it goes through the mission control, we've already got a system up and running and you can control it directly over IP. So you can send up your payload commercially to the International Space Station through Europe. It's called IceCubes, as I said, just icecubeservice.com, and you can control it directly from your phone at Starbucks. So that's a commercial opportunity that you can do right now.
About the non-launch, non-exploration, can you bring that conversation back to more the commercial reality?
Yeah.
I've got a little bit, sorry.
With respect to exploration or mining or resourcing, Australia is actually a world leader in autonomous mining and other various techniques. Now, if we're going to do our normal risk-averse thing here and just sit back and watch everyone else take over when we've had some of the best technologies in the world, I think that's ridiculous. So this is where you need the long-term vision. There's no, I agree with you, it's not an immediate term business case or money maker, but unless we get involved in some niche areas on the international arena, so whether it's universities and starting working in those areas, there could be short-term benefits straight away for the local infrastructure already, but then we'll be better placed when in 20, 30, 40, 50 years when some of this resource utilisation is starting to have benefits for the human race. So I think we've got to have a strategy here. So if that's an area we think we're good at, let's get our fingers in the pie. It doesn't have to be massive investments, but that's have a strategy.
That's the strategy. Australia has three of the four biggest mining companies in the world. We have clearly the best mining automation. The Rio Tinto in particular has got the best mining automation in the world. We do the best mining research in the world. So we're trying to exploit that. In fact, we actually got the future mining conference together with this off-earth mining so that the mining people and space people could be in the same room having a conversation. And this is a big area where Australia could benefit, and an area where we're actually, you know, we can exploit our leadership in mining and piggyback on that.
Right, but let's be the specialist contractors that get paid to do that. Let's not put Australia's money into that so much, because it's not. So what we're currently spending money on, and what we spend, you know, hundreds of million dollars on per year, is, you know, purchasing satellite data for real life applications that Australians cannot do without on a day-to-day basis. This is the value add for Australia, is the downstream satellite data applications right now, and that's what we need to capitalize on and cut that from 200 million to 20 million by having a space agency tomorrow.
I wanted to bring it back. Australia is a support mechanism. Can you see us play a significant role in just going back in order to be a support mechanism for the rest of the world? What would be required?
A support mechanism? What do you mean exactly?
So we've mentioned data, we've mentioned mining, and we've mentioned essentially non-launching activities. What, in your opinion, from your research, can you see in terms of, I guess, deep space research, or what is it that we need to do in order to support those initiatives going forward if we don't go into launch and exploration?
I mean, Australia already plays a massive role in supporting space exploration through the Deep Space Network, for example. I mean, you know, the need for tracking stations in this part of the world is massive, and things like, you know, Voyager and the probes out at Jupiter and Saturn and New Horizons, all of those are using these stations and need to do that. So we're already as you know, playing a massive role in terms of supporting exploration from other agencies, and there are a lot of people who are involved in some part of space exploration and in space science, just through by virtue of being educated here in great universities, and then connecting with other places, and that's so in terms of that, I think we're very connected to a lot of work going on in space right now. But I think the big advantages for growth now are the things like the launch and then fabrication, and you know, we've got facilities to do a lot of this stuff already. There's a massive facility in Canberra for space junk tracking, for testing of satellites. I mean, we're building this CubeSat here in Melbourne, and we're going to do all the testing in Canberra at the facilities they've already got set up there. A lot of the infrastructure already exists, but so I think that, you know, we can develop further the sort of the inclination, the study, the you know, developing the entrepreneurship, the programs within universities. We can get more involved by doing things like these satellites and other things. But it's coordination, I think, that from my perspective is the thing that's really missing.
Yep.
Along those lines, we've done some amazing stuff with the international agency. So the Japanese one, for example, Hayabusa, bringing that sample back to Australia. The only reason we got involved with that was because we just happened to have a big block of land and they've got a small block. There wasn't really much aligned. We should have taken advantage of that and said, look, let's get our research involved in other aspects of that program rather than just providing a service, which they paid everything for, and then we just provide the land. So that my view is we should be working a lot harder if we are supporting it, not just providing a service. Let's get more involved with the technology and that's involved. A similar thing happened with supersonic aircraft research, where Japan came to Australia, launched rockets and did all sorts of stuff. I tried to get some collaboration happening in the R&D of the aeronautical stuff, and there was no bites at all. So that's where we need to make sure the deep, a lot of the ground networks are virtually majority funded by the other agencies. Australia doesn't commit to R&D making better quality antennas or whatever they need to improve that capability of deep space tracking. So we need to be more than just providing a bit of land. We need to be getting skin in the game, investing some of our own money, and if we did that, we'd get bigger shares or get more involvement with these programs.
Can I just make a related point, which also comes back to an earlier question about what people here could do, for instance? Peter's image at the beginning of the dish where the four guys are looking up into the sky, what was that movie about? That movie was about taking a radio telescope and using it for space tracking, right? Now, many people, or the general community, politicians, even down to where the politicians put the money, think of astronomy and space being in the same box. And this has always been to space's disadvantage, because all the money in Australia has gone to astronomy. The dish is a fantastic example of taking something from astronomy and using it for space. So if, you know, one thing that you can do is whenever everyone says, oh, look at all that money that's being spent on space, look at this square kilometre array. No, not space. Astronomy. Astronomy is not space.
Well, the Reform of Space Activities Act, the Reform of the Space Activities Act, yep. The one that was written in 1998, is being open to public consultation sometime yep. in August, they think. So if we, as the general public, seemingly don't understand the difference between astronomy and space, what consultation can we possibly... what can be gained from public consultation?
Yeah, the public consultation on that was actually pretty good. There was a fair bit of feedback from people. The way that was structured, that act, the act as it was, really did not deal with the way people are doing, or the way the space industry operates now. It was really quite poorly, well, it wasn't quite poorly drafted, it's certainly poorly equipping us for what we need to be doing now. For instance, we'd spent a couple hundred thousand dollars on a CubeSat and they were asking us to insure it for $750 million or something, because that was the maximum potential damage that it could do. It was ridiculous. But to look at it, it's all very regulation. Thou shalt do this, thou shalt do that, fill in this form, pay this fee. But also, it doesn't tell us what we want to do. What's our ambition? What are we here for? What is the point of this document? Why are we doing all this stuff that you've written all these rules out for us?
I'm going to... Don't tweet this. There was one section about international collaboration, part 5A of the Space Activities Act 1998. It has like three lines. It's dreadful. The whole thing is really, really, really constrictive. It prohibits space activities and space things in Australia. The other side of the JAXA stuff, they got put through so much crap just to get that landing. They had to do four different sets of paperwork, pay a lot of money. It took years and years of getting all this stuff done. And they finally got permission to do this 2010 landing. They submitted duplicate paperwork in 2012 to do the 2020 landing. In 2014, just because I happened to be an Australian in the building at this thing overseas, I got pulled in front of the Hayabusa 2 mission manager and got asked to explain what Australia was doing and why hadn't they processed the duplicate paperwork yet. Like, what do I say to that? You know, and it still hadn't been done in 2000. Well, has it been processed yet?
It's still struggling with paperwork.
Like, you know, so even if other people are paying for it and doing everything themselves, it's bad.
The Space Act originally wasn't written looking at the broad context of what Australia was going to get involved with. It was typically to solve a problem of an Australian launch because of the international law, and it was very narrow just to solve one problem. So they didn't think of it as a big picture. And we've been left with that problem when we start doing all these other diverse activities. So that's why one of the reasons why the Department of Industry have actually pulled in an expert. They've had all this consultation and they're coming up with proposals to move forward. So it's actually, and again, the Space Industry Association, from their perspective, provided input. I'm sure people from all other areas of the community with different usages.
So I just want to put in a word for astronomy here. It's true that space development, space technology, and astronomy are not always connected. A lot of astronomy we do is we're just looking at space. We're not going there. We don't need stuff out there. But I think we can exploit the connections people make between these things. I think that can be a really powerful thing. In some cases people will say, oh, astronomy, you know, what does that do for us? NASA has been really successful at showing that investment in astronomy can have a lot of follow-on stuff for technology, a lot of follow-on stuff for bringing people into science. Just the level of engagement that they get as an agency. we don't have the same kind of investment. That's what I'm saying. We're doing a CubeSat. It's going to be a space telescope. It's going to be, if it flies, one of the first couple of CubeSats ever produced in Australia. That's one example. We just don't have the investment right now. But this is something that can be used to our advantage.
I think we. Obviously, in the past, things have been siloed, and bigger buckets of money have appeared to go in one area and other areas. And my view in the future is we can't silo space and just say space engineering's got this definition. If you don't do that, it's not space, because space is spread across everything these days. And we need to, as a space community, bring together all these other areas. So the astronomers in Australia designed some of the world's best instruments, and that doesn't mean they just have to be on Earth. And we can use this technology, these advanced instrumentation test facilities and these experts to put skin in the game into sensors that are in space as well. So we've got to get rid of this silo. Cyber security. Cyber is very important for all elements of society, and it's the same for our data links. So we need to be closely aligned with them. Big data and data decision. All those areas which support banking, finance, it's important in space. So we need to stop getting too siloed, becoming friends with everyone, agriculture, water, mining, and just work together with a vision. That's my view.
So sadly, we have to wrap up. So the last question, the five of you have been nominated as the panel to appoint the next head of the space agency, newly formed in Australia. In one sentence each, progressing that description of that bio, because you know I love bios, tell me what you're looking for. Describe the position. So I might start with...
So
One sentence each.
One sentence, yeah. So we need a learner, not a knower. We need a player, not a victim.
I think I'd be looking for someone who could really, you know, give us something inspirational in terms of like a 10-year plan. Someone who could work our way to exporting more in space than we import. I have an example. I can answer my own question next.
Technically competent, internationally networked and recruited from overseas, but not me.
I see someone that doesn't necessarily have to come from the space sector, but is very astute of all the benefits we need in the country. This person needs to be very strong-willed and can work in the highest level of governments, because there's a lot of power play there they've got to sort out, but also can work on the international environment very effectively.
Yeah, I'd want somebody who's interested in creating an organization that will work with a lot of different sectors and different kinds of people, and you know, that really sees the benefit of a truly diverse group of people in a truly you know, networked kind of institution.
Thank you. Now, please thank the panel. And
I have one more thing to quickly add as well. No, I always do. One thing, one sentence. The consultation for the Space Activities Act is done. Don't worry, it's fixed. It's really good. It's getting fixed. There is one more consultation that's currently underway, and it closes on the 31st of May. So please put inputs into this. It's the Department of Industry, and they want to know what's the vision for Australian technology until 2030. So let's input into that and put in about having an Australian space agency, because without that in 2030, we're not going to advance much in any other industries. So please make that. Yeah, 31st of May, so get that in on the weekend.
And I'm going to interject something too. If you want to keep up with our CubeSat, it's called Skyhopper. The website will be live soon, but the Twitter feed already is. There's nothing tweeted on it yet. But if you follow that, it will tweet the website. It's Skyhopper Space on Twitter, so check it out.
So to that point, I think there's been a couple of key dates being announced. We might push those through Moonshot X. Please thank our panel. I've got some final... thank you. Earlier this year, I had the privilege of interviewing Peter Diamandis, who I'm sure he's not known to any of you guys in the room, but it was soon after the launch of his biography. And Peter has a saying, because I'm part of his mastermind, he has the saying, if you want to become a billionaire, help a billion people. The great thing about him is that he thinks very broadly. His other quote is, the first trillionaire is going to be made in space, which just boggles the mind about how many people are just out there. So thank you.